Chapter 13. 1 July 1934. Lizzie felt uneasy. She could see Nick studying her, frowning, pushing his thick brown hair back off his forehead. "Lizzie, come with me to Mrs. Mortimer this afternoon. She'll help you."
"No, Lizzie," Joey protested. "They'll persuade you to go home. Then I'll be on my own."
"My mother will be worried stiff, you going off like that. Did you leave a note?"
"No."
"Lizzie's staying with me," Joey said obstinately. "She can always go back later, can't she?"
"They're trying to find a school for her. You don't want them to stop looking."
"Lizzie'll write and tell your mother she still wants it," Joey said. "She'll go back later."
She burst out, "I wish you'd both stop arguing about me."
"There's a train this afternoon, Lizzie. I'll take you to the station and then find a phone and ask my mother to meet you."
"Why won't you take no for an answer?"
Joey's rage spilled over. It made Lizzie want to reach out to him. She could sense his growing desperation. She knew she was his security, in the same way he was hers. Together they could do anything. Apart, she felt lost. Joey must feel the same. Nick changed tack.
"What about your dinner? Where will you have that today?"
Already there was a wonderful smell of cooking drifting upstairs.
"We'll go to a cafe or something. Leave us alone, can't you?"
"Why don't I go down and ask if my landlady has enough to feed you two? How much will she charge?"
"It'll be on me. It's the least I can do."
"Ask her," said Joey, "if she's got an empty room, too."
"I know she hasn't, but she might know of somewhere."
"That'd be a help,"
Lizzie said, and sat listening as Nick's footsteps squelched on the linoleum as he ran downstairs.
"Don't let him persuade you," Joey said through clenched teeth. "I need you, Lizzie. Haven't we always stuck together?"
She felt twisted in two. Nick, she knew, had her best interests at heart, but she couldn't imagine what that sort of school would be like.
"I'm not leaving you. Don't worry."
"You'd be on your own in a boarding school. We'd be apart for years. It would change you. It would never be the same for us after that."
Lizzie shivered. Joey had always been the most important person in her life. All her hopes, support, and affection had come from him. She couldn't imagine being without him.
"You're in luck," Nick said when he came back. Not only could they stay for dinner, but the landlady's cousin had a room she wanted to rent. "She says it's not as good as this, but it'll be all right. She's asking 12 and 6 pence a week."
"Just for one room?"
Joey asked. "How can we afford that?"
"You get breakfast and evening meal as well."
"For one?"
"Yes, for one.
I want Lizzie to go home. My mother would never forgive me if I let you stay here without anywhere to live."
"No," said Lizzie. "I'm staying with Joey. I'll get a job, too."
"Me and Lizzie stick together. We're twins, aren't we?"
"That's childish nonsense, and you know it.
You're too young, Lizzie. I don't like to think of you wandering about on the streets. It isn't safe."
Nick put the weight of his 18 years behind his words.
"You're just a couple of kids. You don't know what you're doing.
It's no more difficult to manage here than it was at home. Our place wasn't like yours, you know,"
Joey said fiercely.
"I do wish you'd stop fighting over me," Lizzie said. "I couldn't let Joey come on his own."
While they were tucking into a good dinner, Joey looked up.
"Can you show me where I have to go tomorrow? I don't know where to find Evans's."
"It's in Birkenhead, not far from Camel Laird's. You have to walk under the railway bridge. I could take you on the bus to see the place."
"Thanks," Joey said. "That would be a big help."
Lizzie found herself on the top deck of a bus again.
"You can pick up the bus at the sheds in New Ferry," Nick explained as they walked down to the bus stop.
They had to walk a short distance at the other end, too.
"They've been making toffee here for over 100 years, Nick told them when the building came in sight.
"Looks like it," Joey said, pulling a face.
Lizzie had seen pictures of old cotton mills in her school books that looked like this. It was a huge, gaunt building of smoke-blackened bricks, with iron bars on the small windows. The large sign, which read, "Archibald Alfred Evans, Toffee Makers to the World," was crusted with dirt, too.
Lizzie thought it looked a depressing place.
"Do you like working here, Nick?"
"Not much." A sweet, rather sickly smell of toffee hung about it and the adjoining streets. "Why is it called Evans's if it belongs to the Mortimers?" Joey demanded. "It doesn't make sense to me,"
Nick explained.
"Hugo Mortimer bought it from the Evans family as a going concern. He'd have lost trade if he'd changed the name."
He hurried them back to the bus stop.
"I'm going up to Prenton to see Mrs. Mortimer now. I want you to come with me, Lizzie."
"No."
Joey had a mulish look on his face. "Leave her alone, can't you?"
"If I'm going to do something for you, Joey, you have to do something for me," Nick said.
"I'm sorry I asked for your help. I'd have got a job on my own if I'd known."
"Go ahead and try, then." "I'll have to go and see Mrs. Mortimer by myself."
Nick was frowning.
"Lizzie, they'll be out of their minds at Yarrow. She'll let them know."
A thought was pounding in her head.
"Is she my mother?"
It had been on her mind since Nick had first mentioned her, that day in the stables at Yarrow.
"I do want to find my mother."
"I'm not sure."
"You said she was. A long time ago you said she was."
"I don't know, Lizzie. She's very kind. She'll want to help you."
"Let's go, Joey."
Lizzie turned to him.
"If she's my mother, I want to know. You said you'd help me look for her. Isn't that why we both came to Birkenhead?"
"I don't want—"
"I won't go home, and I won't stay with her,"
Lizzie told him through clenched teeth.
"Now will you come?"
Joey gave in with very bad grace. He sulked on the seat behind them in the bus, walked behind them dragging his feet when they got off. The sight of Oak Ridge made Lizzie catch her breath in disbelief.
"Is this her home?"
She let her eyes feast on its many windows, elegant porch. "It's a mansion," Joey added. Lizzie hung back shyly when Nick rang the front doorbell. A woman in a maid's uniform opened it. She knew Nick. Lizzie felt hope die when she heard her say Mrs. Mortimer had gone away for a few days. Nick's spirits seemed to droop.
"Would you mind if I used the telephone? I'd like to ring home and talk to my mother."
Lizzie hung back.
"We'll go, Nick," she said awkwardly. "No point in us staying if she's not here."
Joey was feeling for her hand, pulling her down the path. She could feel his relief that Nick had achieved nothing.
"Don't forget to do the necessary for tomorrow, Nick," he called cheekily. "I'll get there before 10.
Nick asked the operator for the Yarrow number.
"Nick?"
His mother sounded distraught.
"We've just discovered Lizzie O'Malley has disappeared. It seems she went to the station and—"
"She's here, Mother, in Birkenhead. That's what I'm ringing about. I've seen her and Joey. They came to my rooms this morning."
"Is he there, too? We were wondering—"
"Maisie's certain he's gone to his farm job."
"He's here, Mother. I've just said so."
"Nick, you must persuade her to come back."
"I can't. I've been trying to, but she wants to stay here. She's determined."
"Tell her we're looking for a school."
"I already have. I don't think she believes me."
His mother sounded cross with him.
"You can't have tried very hard."
Nick shuffled his feet on the carpet and didn't answer.
"Is she all right? Does she look well?"
He thought of Lizzie. She had plaits fastened with elastic bands like all Maisie's girls. But while theirs were mousy and finger-thin, Lizzie's hair was ash-blonde and the plaits thick, long ropes. She was almost as thin as the O'Malley children, but taller and stronger. She wore the same heavy boots and crumpled clothes and had the same air of vulnerability. He'd grown used to seeing Lizzie about his home. He'd teased her as he did Lucy. He remembered her sitting watching him in the playroom when he'd been building his first crystal set, and the look of utter astonishment and pleasure on her face when he'd handed her the earphones and she'd heard her first broadcast. He'd larked about with her. He liked her. He was afraid she'd come to harm. 14 was far too young for her and Joey to be on their own.
"Make sure you stay in contact with her. Do you know her address?"
"I don't think she has one yet."
"I blame the O'Malley lad. He's always up to some mischief."
"He wants the job as office boy at Evans's."
"What job?"
office boy. Look, Nick, Mrs. Mortimer's here, Hannah Mortimer. She says, such a shock to find Lizzie gone. I didn't know she was with you. Just for a few days. She wants a word with you. Hold on. Nick closed his eyes and waited. Hannah Mortimer's voice, when it came, had a note of urgency. She made him repeat every detail and asked more questions.
Please don't lose contact with Elizabeth. I was looking forward so much to seeing her. I can't believe she's gone, but I'd have seen her if I'd stayed at home.
He had to tell her they had no lodging yet.
Ask Greg to make sure Joey O'Malley gets the job. Have you got that? They'll stay together, won't they? I'll be able to find Lizzie if you do that.
They'll stay together, Nick said.
Everything I try to do for the girl is always too little and too late, Hannah mourned. I'll be home on Tuesday. I'll have a word with her then.
Together, Lizzie and Joey ran back to the bus stop, took one bus into town, and then immediately caught another out to New Ferry again. Riding on the top of a double-decker bus was a novelty they enjoyed. It bounced Joey back to his usual good temper. They had a walk round, but all the shops were closed. They found the Labour Exchange.
I'll get a job too, Lizzie said cheerfully. This is the place for me to come tomorrow.
The windows were covered with green paint, so it was impossible to see in, and she could see no jobs advertised.
The important thing now is to find ourselves a room.
Joey took out the newspaper page he'd folded into his pocket. Lizzie put her head close to his to study the ticks he'd made on it. There were two rooms advertised to let in New Ferry. It took time, because they had to keep asking the way, and energy to find the addresses given. The first room was dark and dirty, and one peep decided them against it. The second was a sunny and pleasant upstairs room, overlooking a back garden. Lizzie felt relief as soon as she saw it. She knew she'd feel more settled if she could get a roof over her head.
I like this. It would suit us down to the ground.
They're asking too much, Joey said crossly. No wonder they didn't put the rent in the paper.
We've got to get somewhere, she said. Be reasonable. We can always move later if we find a cheaper place.
No, I said. Joey barked, his face tight with tension. Lizzie felt exhausted. They went into the park and sat on the grass.
Sorry, but it was more than we could afford.
He stopped a war's ice cream tricycle and treated them to a penny snow fruit each by way of consolation. The sky was growing more overcast, and it was no longer warm enough to sit about. Soon there was drizzle in the air.
Let's go back to the greenhouse, then.
Lizzie was trying hard not to complain. It's getting miserable here. Joey was reluctant. It would be safer to wait till after dark.
It won't be dark for hours, and we'll be soaked. Even under this tree we're getting wet.
We don't want to be seen going in. He insisted they walk across the top of the road first. They could see an old man and a boy walking a dog, so they went on a few yards to give them time to get out of the way. There was a car parked outside one of the houses further down. Joey continued to hesitate.
What if the owner comes out and sees us?
He was all for walking on.
We'll have to risk it, Lizzie said, in a voice that brooked no argument.
It was beginning to rain more heavily, and she was worried the things they'd buried would get wet.
The bushes will shelter them, Joey insisted. But come on, then. Let's get in and out of sight as fast as we can.
Even he was smiling with relief as he shot the bolts behind them on the door to the back garden.
I don't think we've been seen. Did the curtains twitch opposite?
No, Lizzie was relieved. We're in safe and sound. But in the overgrown garden, it was impossible to move from the path without getting wet. The shrubs and trees were in full leaf and dripping with moisture. The long grass made her stockings wet. Lizzie felt cold drips down her neck as they dug up their belongings. Rain dripped off Joey's face, and worse, he was proved wrong about their belongings staying dry. The brown paper was disintegrating around the blanket, and that was wet too. They hurried with them to the greenhouse.
Lizzie pushed open the door, expecting to feel the same airless warmth she'd felt the previous night. Instead, it felt chill and damp. Drips were pattering down on the soil where they'd slept the night before. A little pool was collecting in the hole she'd dug for her hip. It hadn't even occurred to her that the greenhouse might not be watertight. For the first time, she noticed several panes were cracked.
"Joey!"
He dropped the suitcase and put his arms around her, hugging her tight.
"This is awful. What are we going to do?"
"I don't know, Lizzie. I'm sorry. We should have had that room."
"We've got plenty of money," she said. "Hardly spent any yet."
"I wanted to keep it in case we need..."
"Isn't this a need? We'll never need anything more."
"I'm sorry." He kissed her cheek. "I never thought..."
"What are you keeping the money for?"
"To make more. Lots of people could be rich if only they could put their hands on a few pounds to start off."
"We have to live too, Joey."
"We were all right last night. I didn't realize that if the weather broke..."
"Neither did I," Lizzie admitted. "I suppose it's a bit late to start looking now."
"We need another newspaper." Joey was untying his suitcase. "Look, this corner isn't too bad, and at least we know we won't be disturbed."
"What are you doing?"
"There's a nail here. I'm going to hang up my suit and best shirt so they won't be creased tomorrow."
Paving stones had been laid along the floor. They were hard and cold, but at least they were dry. They decided to keep all their clothes on and roll themselves in the blanket. Lizzie clung to Joey's warm body for comfort. His arms held her tight.
"Are you sorry you said you'd stay with me?" he whispered, his breath warm against her cheek.
"No, we belong together. This is what we planned."
"Nick was right. I shouldn't keep saying we're twins. We aren't any relation, Lizzie, though we've always been together."
"Shared the same cradle."
"We'll get married when we're properly grown up. That's what we'll do."
"We always said we would."
"Tomorrow we'll get a room," Joey promised as they tried to settle down to sleep again. The rain splattered against the glass and the drips were only too audible. By morning, Lizzie felt disheveled and damp. She would have liked a good wash, but the best she could do was to splash cold water on her face. She advised Joey to do the same. After all, it was important they both looked as though they'd spent a night in bed. Joey dressed himself up in his suit and borrowed Lizzie's comb. He was thankful to find the rain had stopped, so he wouldn't get a soaking on the way. Joey felt nervous as he took the bus down to Evans's. So much depended on his having this job. No other would be quite so good for his purpose. The factory looked even more forbidding this morning, against the dark sky. Nick had told him the other applicants would have received letters telling them all to come at 10 o'clock for an interview. Joey hoped he wouldn't be asked to show his letter. If he was, he'd pretend he'd left it at home. Nick had said they would be seen on a first-come, first-in basis, so he planned to be early. Because neither he nor Lizzie owned a watch, when he reached Evans's, he found the office staff still streaming into work. He followed. A clock in the entrance hall told him it was an hour before the appointed time. He was swept into a cloakroom by a cloud of men. Most seemed of a different breed to those he was used to. They were smartly dressed in suits and clearly knew each other. They juggled newspapers, umbrellas, and briefcases, while they hung hats and Macintoshes on pegs. Joey was afraid one might ask him his business. He was afraid, too, that the man who was to interview him might be amongst them. Many were middle-aged. He shot into a cubicle and locked the door until the chorus of good mornings had died down and the silence told him he was alone. Then, because there was hot water, soap and towels, he decided he might as well take his shirt off and wash properly. When he'd finished, he wrapped the soap in toilet paper and put it in his pocket to take back for Lizzie. He checked again with the clock in the hall. He still had time to kill, so he went out into the street again and walked briskly. There were other factories nearby. He knew he was close to Camel Laird's. He could hear hammering. He could hear a train. The whole area seemed to be filled with industries. Joey hated the high brick walls, the dirt, noise, and smoke. At what he judged might be 9:45, he went back through the front door and asked the receptionist for Mr. Gleason. He was the first interviewee to arrive. They left him sitting in a corridor for a time. Joey tried to gear himself up, tried to remember all Nick had told him about the business. Another youth came to occupy the seat next to him. Joey studied him, trying to see reasons why he might be preferred. He decided there weren't any. The waiting was making him nervous. At last a middle-aged secretary came to the door and summoned him in. In the adjoining office, he found himself facing Mr. Gleason's desk. "Good morning, sir," he said, and stood waiting to be asked to sit down. Those had been Nick's instructions. It took a moment for Mr. Gleason to look up. Black-framed glasses didn't hide the calculating look that came Joey's way. The man had a bulbous nose and flabby cheeks.
"Good morning."
He was shuffling through letters. Joey watched him extract the one he'd written and put it on top.
"It's Joseph O'Malley?"
"Yes, sir." He was trying to smile and look relaxed as he was asked about his age and his school. It wasn't easy. He brought out his school reference. He was asked why he'd gone to Birkenhead to work and why he'd chosen to apply to Evans's. Joey was keen to get the job and tried to show it. He talked about treacle toffee being made here for 100 years. It was easy to be enthusiastic about toffee. He'd seen it on sale in Pen a Clip, but rarely had money to spare for it. He didn't doubt the other boys would show their enthusiasm for the product. He inquired what his duties would be and tried to show enthusiasm for them, too. Then he was sent back to wait in the corridor. Two other boys had arrived by now and were trying to find out what he'd been asked. He kept his mouth firmly shut. He was beginning to feel hopeful. When he was called in again, Mr. Gleason offered him the job. No need to force a smile now. He knew he was beaming. He'd got what he'd wanted. On the way out, he called in the same cloakroom, took down a roller towel, folded it neatly, and buttoned his jacket over it. Not much point in taking soap back to Lizzie if she couldn't dry herself afterwards. It was drizzling again, so Lizzie waited for Joey in Woolworth's doorway, which was almost opposite the bus sheds. She'd walked all round it twice and thought it a wonderful shop. She caught a glimpse of Joey as the bus turned in and waved. Moments later he ran across the road to her, gripped her arm and pulled her into the shop. "I've got it! I've got it!" he crowed. "I've got the job!" He was euphoric. His strange eyes shone with success. "Did you see any of the Mortimer family?" He laughed aloud and shook his head.
"Didn't even see Nick. Only a Mr. Gleason, who's in charge of personnel. A real old misery guts. Can't believe my luck, Lizzie."
She felt a surge of relief that all was going according to plan.
"This is our chance, don't you see?" He took both her hands in his. "We'll get our own back on them."
"No," she protested. "We don't know the Mortimers. All you want is a job." There was a new intensity in his manner.
"I'll take everything I can from them. I want revenge and I want their money. They'll pay for what they did to you. I tell you, Lizzie, I'll wreak vengeance on them."
She shivered. "No, you won't be able to anyway. You're just the office boy."
"I won't always be. You mark my words. I won't always be. There's nothing I can't do for you."
"Joey, I don't want you to do anything but work. Let's just have a good time."
"You should hate them. They abandoned you at birth. They're rich, but they didn't care how poor you were. They didn't help you."
Lizzie laughed nervously, a little shocked at Joey's vindictiveness. "When are you starting?"
"Tomorrow. We've got to find somewhere to live before then."
"I think I already have." She felt put out by Joey's mood. "Not far from here, not far from the greenhouse where we've left our things. There was a notice in the window about a room to let, so I knocked and asked to see it. It's not wonderful, but it would do to start. Only 4 shillings a week. I said you'd have to see it before I said yes."
"Let's go now, then. The sooner we get somewhere, the better."
Lizzie had never known him step out so briskly.
As they came to the house, she said, "This is the place."
The gate was broken from its lower hinge and hung at a drunken angle. The garden was overgrown with rank grass. Tall trees and bushes dripped moisture from the recent shower. It was another of the many substantial Victorian semi-detached villas in the district. It had been designed for the middle classes, but over the years had come down in the world. The front door stood open, the paint was peeling off, adding to the general air of neglect. The bell didn't work. Lizzie hammered on a large brass knocker, covered in verdigris. An inner door with stained glass panels was snatched open by an unshaven man wearing braces over a soiled vest.
"What do you want?"
"I've brought my twin brother to see the room, Mr. Redway," Lizzie said. "You remember me?"
"Come in," he grunted,
and stood back to reveal a narrow hall with worn linoleum and peeling wallpaper.
"Don't think much of this," Joey whispered when he turned his back.
The man threw open a door further down the passage. They were blinking in the sudden gloom. Lizzie could feel Joey crowding in behind her to see.
"Electric light," the man said, snapping it on. "Your own meter."
A single bare bulb swung from the center of the ceiling. There was a sitting room grate set in dark green tiles in an oak surround. A kettle and three battered saucepans stood on the hearth. A stuffed Victorian couch and armchair were pulled up close. There was a small table and a couple of dining chairs. The sagging double bed was pushed into a corner.
"Not bad," Joey said in guarded tones. "Everything you need."
The guide picked his teeth in the doorway and waited. Joey pulled back the curtains to let in more light. The sash window looked out on a wall of blackened brick some 3 feet away. This was a middle room, originally meant to be a dining room, between the sitting room to the front and the morning room and kitchen, which overlooked the back garden.
"Not enough blankets on this bed,"
Lizzie was separating the threadbare covers.
"I suppose I could let you have an eiderdown."
"What about dishes?"
"In the cupboard there. Use a bathroom upstairs, and you can wash up in the kitchen."
"How many other people are here?" Joey wanted to know.
"There's a married couple got the front room next door and the front bedroom above, and another in the room over yours. They're all apart from us."
"We'll take it," Joey said. "Yes, Lizzie?"
"Yes," she agreed. They had to get somewhere dry before tonight. She watched Joey pay. The man wanted 2 weeks' rent so that they'd always be a week in hand.
When they were alone, Joey inspected the contents of the cupboards.
"It'll do for a start," he said, "but I hope we won't be staying long.
At least we don't have to sneak in and out."
Lizzie felt filled with relief.
"We've a right to be here."
"We're doing all right. We've somewhere to live and I've got a job."
"I'll soon find a job too."
When he looked down the columns of the newspaper he'd bought yesterday, Joey had said, "It'll be easier for you to get a job than me." Lizzie had agreed. Mostly the jobs advertised were for women. It was only now, after she'd studied them more closely, that she realized those for which she could apply were mostly live-in domestic posts.
"They won't do," Joey said with disgust when she pointed it out. "You've come here to be with me. I don't want you living somewhere else. We'd never see each other."
Lizzie would have liked to work in an office like Joey, but for that she needed to be able to type. Factory and shop work seemed harder to come by. Later on that day, when they'd picked up their suitcase and parcels from the greenhouse and unpacked them in their room, they went out to buy food. A short walk past the park brought them to New Ferry Toll Bar. Tolls had ceased to be paid in the last century, and the toll cottage demolished to make room for a bank. It was now a busy crossroads and shopping centre with a small market. They were waiting to buy sausages in a butcher's shop when Joey drew her attention to the notice in the window. "Help wanted. Young girl for general shop and household work."
"Ask about it," he urged. "Only a short walk from our room. Handy for you."
When she did, the man serving her in a blood-stained apron called upstairs for his wife. While Lizzie waited, Joey whispered,
I'll go home and start cooking the sausages.
She found herself being led past a butcher's block where the carcass of a pig was cut half up. The smell of raw meat and blood was strong. Then she was climbing dark stairs to the living room over the shop, and once upstairs delicious scents of roasting were filling the air, making saliva run in her mouth. "I'm Mrs. Edmonds." The woman had a tough face and iron-grey hair dragged into a tight bun. "I hope you're a worker. We've no use for slackers here." Lizzie assured her she was. She heard that her duties would be to clean the living accommodation and help with the cooking. She peered round the door of a poky kitchen. Sounds and scents of roasting came from a black gas cooker on legs. Another huge joint of beef cooled on the drain board. "Cook meat for the shop," the woman explained. "We slice it and sell it by the quarter. Pork, too. And we make potted meats and faggots and refined lard and dripping. I usually put in a few roast potatoes for our own dinner at the same time. Your job will be to help with all this."
"I've done quite a lot of cooking," Lizzie assured her, though she'd never seen joints the size of these. "Will I be serving in the shop, too?"
"Perhaps at the weekends when we're busy."
They were downstairs again in the room behind it.
"But it's more important that you keep this room clean. And I mean really clean. It has to be hygienic. You'll have to collect any bones and fat we can't use and pack them into boxes and paper bags, ready to be taken away."
Lizzie viewed the pile collecting in the corner and tried to smile.
15 shillings a week," the woman said. "Half day Thursday, and we stay open late on Saturdays. You can come on a week's trial."
Lizzie agreed. She had to have a job, and this was a firm offer. But she thought Joey had come off better than she had. Still, if she didn't like it, she could keep looking, and if anything better came up, she could give in her notice. This would be a start.
9 o'clock sharp tomorrow,"
the woman said as she closed the door behind her. Once outside again, Lizzie looked above the shop.
"Enoch Edmonds," she read, "family butcher since 1906.
She ran home to Joey, who'd got a fire going in the grate. It made their room seem cozy and cheerful.